Welcome to another episode of Inside Line. This time round, we're talking to a couple of guys who've taken part in an extraordinary bike journey, riding a Suzuki V-Strom 1000 from Peterborough in the UK all the way back to where the bike was built in Hamamatsu in Japan. A mere 16,254 miles. Chaps, let me introduce them. John Westlake and Hugo Wilson from Bike Magazine. Bit of a trip, man. In which pub, at what time of night, did this idea get generated?
I think it was at the NEC in 2013.
Is this in a bar in the NEC?
It is quite likely that it was in a bar, or certainly whilst enjoying the after effects of the bar. So I think the V-Strom had just been announced, and we were chatting with Luke from Suzuki, and about things we could do. And, you know, big adventure bike, you've got to ride it a long way. So it seemed completely logical and obvious.
At no point does it sound logical to ride all the way back to Japan, for God's sake.
Well, I can't remember what the... I think there were other options. We said, oh, we could ride to South Africa, we could do this, we could do that. But as soon as you went, oh, let's ride to Japan, to the factory, you go, oh, yeah, let's do that.
Now that you've put it in that sort of context, it does sound like a good idea, doesn't it?
And I think at the time, I'm not sure I fancy it now, but riding through a massive swathe of Russia seemed like a good idea as well. You know, that was the place that a lot of adventure riding was starting to happen. So it sounds, you know, it's going to be a good story, isn't it?
Okay, so that's the evening well before you actually set off. How much planning was involved? When did it actually get rubber stamped as something that was going to happen?
Well, I can't remember, Chris. I think we set off in June, is off the top of my head.
2014. On the new 2014 model.
That's right, yeah. I think it was June. And we'd obviously been chatting about it, but I don't recall any great level of preparation, if I'm honest. I mean, you know, I know that the luggage wasn't available for the... or the hard luggage wasn't available for the bike at the time or something.
You wanted the alloy luggage, didn't
that's
you?
That's right, yeah.
But instead had to go with
had to go with the plastic ones, which proved quite effective at keeping the bike damage-free when it fell over. Yeah. But as far as I recall, there wasn't that much prep. There was some logistical stuff to do with...
Well, hang on a minute. What about routes? You don't just get a map or a sat nav and tap in Hamamatsu and follow the instruction, do you? So, and visas, you know.
Okay, well, I think... But everything, you can do everything at a border. It just takes a while. I didn't have to go through that.
I was just about to add, actually, yes, you were probably not finding too much of a challenge because you only did the first section to Istanbul, didn't
but
you?
So that was one of the issues was, so the original idea was that we'd do it in three chunks with three riders and that we'd break it up more effectively. But the big problem was that most of the more interesting countries, they want to put the registration marks and details of the vehicle in your passport and they want you to leave with it. So in order to get round that, and that starts with Turkey, so we then had to break it down into smaller chunks, and it ended up with the fantastic Jamie doing the bulk of the riding through the difficult stuff.
Let's talk about the chunks. Chunk one was from Peterborough to Istanbul, wasn't it, in Turkey?
Yeah.
You then flew home
to
have Jamie Duncan replace you and ride the bike through. You describe them as interesting. I'd describe them as, I don't know, massively challenging at times, nations. Through the stands, through Russia, all the way to South Korea.
Well, Vladivostok.
Okay. Where he would meet you.
Well, no, the
Vladivostok
idea...
Vladivostok in Russia, in fact.
Yeah, so he'd go to Vladivostok.
Yep.
And then this is where it would start to go a bit wrong.
Yep. We'll come to that.
The idea was it went
wrong at the NEC.
Well, it went wrong on various occasions. But this particular time it went wrong. He was meant to put it on the boat to South Korea.
Ah.
I was then going to fly to South Korea, do a bit of riding around South Korea, get on another boat with the bike to Japan, and then ride from the south of Japan up to Hamamatsu. So quite a short section, but it didn't quite work out like that because...
Well, right, you definitely had a number of challenges and difficulties, didn't you, during the trip? Had you planned them or planned the trip in a bit more detail? I mean, actually just planned the damn thing.
Well, we did.
Do you think you would have found... Would those problems not have existed?
No, but then where's the story?
And also, I think Jamie's the expert. It's shame Jamie's not here. He's on an adventure somewhere else. But, you know, you can overplan easily. And you talk to a lot of adventure riders if you overplan, because nothing goes to plan, even when you plan, you know. And so it was a kind of just an adopting a thing of, okay, so the bike hasn't arrived. It's still on a ship going somewhere else. I will have to make alternative plans and try and find it. And you know, for the magazine point of view, that was great because it was just funny that I'd flown somewhere and I was...
It's funny how things are very humorous in retrospect and hindsight, aren't they?
Well,
but at the time...
I mean, about the time I'd lost all my luggage, or Air France had lost my luggage, and, you know...
Let's come to your bit in due course. Let's be a bit chronological.
Yeah.
Right, you do Peterborough to Istanbul. You do 2,500 miles just over in something like 5 days.
Yeah.
A bit of a slog or fairly easy? I mean, all tarmac, I presume.
It was a really good ride, but I did a slog through Germany. So I got the Rotterdam ferry and then just belted down on the auto routes to Switzerland. Stayed in Switzerland and then I was going to go down through Italy, through Croatia, but I was watching the news in Switzerland and it basically was telling me that there was massive worse floods in Croatia in 40 years or something. So I changed the route and went down through Italy and kind of completely overlooked how far it is from Switzerland to Rome. Arrived quite late in Rome and then got a ferry, got the Brindisi ferry from the bottom of Italy, and with memorably snoring truck drivers in the truck driver's lounge. And then came off at the other end in the morning. Is it Patras, the northern Greek port?
You were there, mate. Don't ask us.
Yeah, I think it was Patras. But had one of those fantastic days riding where I put Twisty Route into SatNav because I knew I'd basically got all day to get to somewhere near the Turkish border. And everyone's coming off the ferry, the trucks and the cars, and they all turned right. This was like 6 a.m. and the SatNav told me to turn left. It's a bit weird. And so I turned left and just was immediately on the most fantastic little back roads and trails and stuff. It was just a really, really good day's riding.
Bit of off-roading then?
Bit of trails.
Stood on the pegs, trying a bit?
Yeah, yeah, big tracks, but yeah, off the pegs. A bit of that kind of panic of going, hang on, I'm in the middle of nowhere, I've got no petrol. That sort of stuff. A bit of that, those fantastic moments where you stop for lunch somewhere in the middle of nowhere and it's fantastic. And then got down near the Turkish border. And then the thing with the getting their name stamped into the logbook. So Jamie flew out to Istanbul, but then he had to come back out and meet me at the border. So he had to cross into Greece, get on the back of the bike. Oh no, he rode the bike then through.
Did he have to enter Turkey then?
Yeah, he had to land in Turkey, then come out of Turkey to go into Greece, then take the bike back through and get it put into his passport. And then...
What was that an issue that you had expected?
Yeah,
or?
We'd anticipated that. Yeah, that's why it happened. But
that was a plan.
We were aware of that.
That was on pint three, wasn't it? Yeah. Ah, we might have to do this. I mean, sounds like you had a very enjoyable and quite memorable trip. Is it one of those trips that you are recalling now with quite a bit of pleasure?
Oh, yeah.
Are you taking yourself back?
Yeah, on two levels. One is that there's always that sense of kind of satisfaction afterwards when you've done really big days riding. Mm. You know,
you had a few 500 to 700 mile days, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So the ride down to Switzerland, I can't remember how far that is, but that's a good ride.
Yep.
And then the one from Lucerne in Switzerland down to Rome, it's another big ride. And then I think I had a bit of time in Rome because I stayed with Mick Phillips.
Right.
And then...
Did you start planning more?
Started planning more adventures.
The journey,
in Rome.
And I had
a great experience actually coming up on the ferry, the whole Rotterdam ferry, where there was a few bikes on it. And you know that thing where you have a chat and they go, where are you off to? And I went, I'm off to Istanbul. And they were like, that's good. I said, bike's going to Japan. And that took some explaining, but yeah, no, it was a...
Did they feel slightly inadequate after you'd said that to them?
Well, I don't know about that, but I think there was...
I think I would have. I mean, Christ, to this day, I know you've done it and everything sort of was accomplished, but... Feel bloody chuffed with yourselves, I'll tell you. You know that.
And I'll tell you what I did feel as well. When I got to Istanbul, we did. I went to down to the Bosphorus, you know, the Straits, and there's the bridge, and we did a photo with Chippy with the bridge, and I did feel really sort of sad that I wasn't going over the bridge and wasn't carrying on.
So Chippy's the photographer. Did you have him fly out, or did he accompany you?
No, he flew down with Jamie.
Got you.
Then they went up to the border,
met
me at the border, and then we went into Istanbul.
Sure. Now, the bike, presumably, has sort of taken all this in its stride. I mean, you put a tank bag on it, didn't you? Panniers, the slim panniers, crash bars, sat-nav, taller screen. Pretty much standard. How was it? I mean, describe the virtues.
It really easy to ride, really straightforward, comfy. It was a really good bike for the trip. And it was, that kind of quite low, compact feel that the V-Strom's got was really good. You know, so I guess maybe when Jamie was riding it in more challenging conditions, he might have wanted a slightly narrower front tyre, but... No, for what I did on it, it was fantastic.
Good.
By the time I got it, Jamie had put a knobbly on. So at some point.
Come to that. You just wait your turn. I know you're gagging to talk to me about your Japanese adventure, and believe you me, it's good listening. Is there any way we can read about this journey? You know, I mean, it was in the magazine over about six issues. Can we get back issues? Is it online?
No.
I mean, that's a great shame. You know? I mean, I read it all last night, the whole chunk. And whilst I was very, very impressed with what you did, there was a few points, and we're going to come to those now, on Jamie's stint of the journey, where I just thought, man, rather you than me. It much easier to read than ride, I'd say.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Chris, what we'll do is, after this, we'll see whether we can do something with PDFs and work out how we can get them to people.
Now we come to the most interesting stint. This is the one that covered about 12,500 miles over 4 months, done by Jamie Duncan. Now, he's not with us now to tell us his part of the story. Explain why not.
Well, I mean, part of the joy of Jamie is that he obeys no rules and does not care in terms of the sort of the normal societal stuff we all obey. And so basically he's gone somewhere and we don't know where he is.
Okay.
So he could be continuing his adventure in Africa. We just don't know. We can't get hold of him. So
we can probably recall between us the sort of challenges he faced. Yeah. Right, he's gone through more, can we call them hostile countries, or was it never that bad, do you think? It wasn't easy going, was it? Things like border crossings, terrain, weather. I mean, that stopped him on a couple of occasions, didn't it? I think on the Silk Road, the route, he went through all the stands, didn't he? Went into Russia, Mongolia, spent a hell of a lot of time in, and then into South Korea, where he was, or not?
No, with the idea was he'd get to Vladivostok.
I beg your pardon, yeah.
And then put the bike on a ferry, and then I'd pick it up. That was the plan.
Now, he's had a couple of issues with the bike as well. Unsurprising. He was putting the dirtiest fuel imaginable into it, wasn't he? I remember on one occasion in his piece, he said that he was absolutely on fumes in the middle of nowhere. And he asked these two guys if there was any petrol stations, and they sort of giggled and pointed to a cafe. Whereupon a lady produced plastic 5-litre sort of previously water bottles full of fuel that he tipped in, but it probably wasn't the best quality stuff. And I think that typified a lot of his journey. And the fuel filter got really clogged, didn't it, and put the fuel pump under strain. So that popped. He said in his piece that if he filled the tank, the gravity feed from the tank, just the weight of the fuel could feed it well enough to run. But when it got about half empty, if he didn't fill it again, it would cong. He had to wait about 5 days, I think, to get a new pump. I mean, were you part of that? You know, did he phone you, Houston, we've got a problem?
Yeah. So there were a couple of occasions where he'd phone and if there was something that we could do at our end, we'd help him with that. I think there was another issue with tyres at one point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can't remember exactly what that was, but I think it was just that the tyres that we'd arranged for him to be somewhere.
You'll find
there.
That have worn out. Well, and he was doing an awful lot of off-road stuff, wasn't he?
Yeah, there were some big trails.
And all credit to him. I mean, look, a V-Strom we know is capable, but it's no 250 enduro bike, is it? You know, and he's got a lot of weight on it as well. But he seemed to enjoy that.
Worth saying that he was a mechanic. You know, Jamie would not suggest that he was anything other than mechanically
inept.
Yeah. And so
we'll come to that. I mean, listen, one of the reasons the bike probably didn't run at its absolute best is because of that. I'm sure he didn't sort of treat it with much TLC. John, you said later when you picked it up, there were a few noises emanating from it. It was just the chain dragging on the floor, you know, because he simply didn't do maintenance, did he? I think he filled it, which is another sort of testament to the toughness and reliability of the bike. He filled it with fuel and just went.
Yeah.
He told a story, though. He was at altitude in Mongolia and he slipped off it eventually because it was really sandy terrain, and we all know how difficult that is, even on a 250 enduro bike. And he slips off and he described it as just being in the place where other life just seemed to be non-existent, and the prospect of it was probably non-existent for hundreds of miles. I think he was on the Silk Road and he hadn't seen anything or anyone for about half a day anyway. And he falls over and he's wondering for a few minutes whether he can actually lift this thing and continue. I think in the end, you know how you develop the strength of 10 men. He whipped one of the panniers off, lifted it and got going. But it really did underline that sort of remote, far, far from any civilization sort of venues that he was and terrain he was riding through. Do you wish you'd have been able to do that, or are you very much glad that you didn't?
Oh, I'd love to. I would love to.
I mean, I think it was...
So why didn't you?
Because, I mean, again, it's Jamie's strength, is that when we said, do you want to do it? He said, yeah, I'll just take 4 months off work. And it, you know, and that, for me, with family, you know, I was just kind of I felt constrained. I thought,
the
I'd love to...
The old excuses.
Well, exactly. But it is, you know, most of us...
I understand, logistically.
Exactly,
yeah.
You kind of think, well, yeah, but...
Mind you, right, I put it to you now. I give you all the resources, including time that you need, to go and do it again from start to finish. You know, Suzuki's got a new V-Strom coming out next year.
I'm up for it.
Two of it, yeah. I mean, would you do the whole thing?
Yeah.
I mean, Jamie's, he's massively inspirational about it.
Are we hatching a plan here?
It sounds like it. Be interesting to think about what the... the political situation was different then. And sure. In fact, that's one of the really interesting things about that kind of travel, isn't it? Is the way the political situations change and different routes become available. But my hunch would be that it'll all be fine. Mm. You know, if you were actually there.
Dodgy hunch, that, mate.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Because you could do it the other way. You could take one from the factory and ride it here, you know. Yeah. You think.
I don't know, the destination of Peterborough doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it?
It's Hamamatsu, yeah.
I mean, he had hassle with border crossings, didn't he? You know, just finding fuel, food. Seemed to meet some of the nicest people on earth when he did bump into them. People couldn't stop themselves helping him if he did require any assistance. I mean, I'm envious. I would like to go there because... And I'm sure you saw this, and we'll come to you very soon, John. Different cultures are some of the most rewarding things to sort of witness and experience, aren't they, in travel? Travel's one of the best and rewarding and educating things to do, isn't it? Let's come to you. The start of your final leg, to back to the factory. That didn't begin well, did it? You'd flown out.
Well, I'd flown from, from obviously UK to another Seoul in South Korea. And we had a plan. And the plan was for that I'd find my way to this port in South Korea where the boat was meant to come in, blah, blah, blah. And then I was trying to remember exactly whether I got an email from Jamie, because he was emailing me about timings, because it was obviously I needed to arrive there to coordinate when the boat came in. And I think he emailed me while I was in the air saying, it's not going to be there. So I think that's right. I think I got in and opened my phone and then got the email of him saying, it's not where you are. It's for some reason, I can't remember why, but...
So that was your landing gift then?
Yeah, so then, so I landed and Air France had lost all my luggage. So luckily I had my lid in hand luggage. So I had a lid, a T-shirt and some trousers. That was it.
And that'll get you to have a bath.
And
too,
I was kind of thinking, well, it's sort of warm, you know, I'll be...
So no protective jacket?
Absolutely none. So I arrived, so I got into Seoul, got Jamie's... and also said, and I've taken the sat-nav. So I think, right, okay, I was kind of banking on that to find my way around. So then I got a flight to Japan, because that's where the boat was going to. He'd sent it straight to Japan. I can't remember why. And so I mean,
you're speaking about this rather calmly now. Was it fraught? Were you fraught at the time? Was it?
I'd sort of almost, as soon as my luggage hadn't turned up, which I was quite annoyed about. And then after that, I kind of thought, hey,
No one's
died. It'll be fine.
No one's died yet.
And so, and I kind of thought, well, and because it was for the feature for the magazine.
There was a sense of purpose, wasn't there?
This is a story already, and I've just got to get on with it. And so I found out how to get to, you know, the flights to Japan. And getting into Japan was really difficult because a bloke with a crash helmet, no hand luggage, nothing, just apart from a crash helmet and a T-shirt. And they say, well, why are you coming here to pick up a bike? Where's the bike? I don't know. And so, yeah, so I had a load of problems, full strip search, because they thought it was some sort of drug thing. The lid was scanned. And eventually they worked out I was a harmless idiot and let me off.
It took them that long.
It was. I was there for probably 2 hours being, you know, good cop, bad cop.
How much grilling then from the bad cop?
Oh, loads. And they were doing that thing where I was thinking, I've seen this on telly. You're getting me to tell the story in backwards and forwards and to you know, and I was just sort of saying, it's just going to be easy because I'm just going to tell the truth, you know. And say, who's Jamie? He's, you know, he's a bloke who's ridden across, you know. And it was, you think,
it sounds believable, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Well, we're riding a V-Strom from Peterborough all the way back to Suzuki for a first service.
Well, the other thing is all the documents, because I thought if I'm stopped, I need to prove what's going on. And stupidly, I put it all in my luggage, which wasn't there. Yeah. So I had no proof. But anyway, but eventually I got to Japan and then got a taxi from the airport to the port.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which I kind of thought might be like Grimsby, you know, quite small.
Why did you think that?
I don't know.
No worse than Grimsby, mate.
I hadn't thought about it. But obviously the port was massive. And I had, you know, Jamie did tell me what courier thing, what ferry service he'd used. So I had a name of a company. And so I just came to the gate and said, I'm looking for this company. And the bloke gave me a bicycle and said, get on this bicycle. And the port was, you know, so I cycled for about 2 miles.
Was it like Felixstowe, just utterly huge?
It was huge. Yeah. And, you know, the industry in Japan, you don't, you know, obviously you know they make a lot of motorbikes and a lot of cars, but until you see it, it's just until, you know, to the horizon of factories and things.
And somewhere there is your bike.
And so, yeah, so I cycle off and, eventually find this little hut, which with this name of this company on, and fortunately found a very beautiful woman called Titania.
Yeah, you made a point of mentioning her.
Well, partly it was relief.
Is she still waiting for you?
She undoubtedly, but she was great. And she said, no, I know where this boat is. And so...
In English?
Her English was pretty good, yeah.
Yep.
So that was a relief. And so, yeah, and then it got surreal. It was just getting more and more surreal.
Surreal then?
Oh, yeah, because then I was waiting and I could see the boat and she said, you just have to wait here. It's probably going to be 3 or 4 hours while they disembark all the stuff. It was a cargo vessel and the bike will be coming out. And I don't even think it was crated. Anyway, so, but the first thing that came out was a circus. So giraffes came out. Wolves.
Sorry, I thought you were using
a satirical
term there.
No.
An
actual circus arrived from Vladivostok. And so after watching giraffes, tigers. I was thinking, this is
what, real animals?
Animals in boxes, yeah, coming off. And I was thinking, this is brilliant. And so I just sat there in the sunshine. It was a lovely day. I was, you know, just sitting on a wall thinking, fantastic. And eventually a speedboat came off, and then the V-Strom was wheeled off.
Was that sort of almost disappointing to see the bike then?
No, I was overjoyed.
Were you in fact quite
overjoyed? I was overjoyed. And then it disappeared into a thing. And then I found it later on in a compound with the speedboat.
Yeah.
But no giraffes?
The giraffes are just gone. I don't know, they just let loose. I don't know, they just scarfed.
No goodbye, nothing.
No. They were probably, I won't say it, but they're probably, dinner by then. I don't know. Yeah. But so I found the bike, and that was, I can remember that feeling of just elation that I think this might actually work, because I'm kind of at the bike.
Was it game on again now?
Yeah.
So was it everything possible once more?
Because you're continually thinking it could all end up if the bike doesn't come off the boat and it's just somewhere in a corner of a massive ship.
I mean, you know, on that note, for every participant, there must have been, there's a great sort of raison d'etre for the whole trip, but by the same token, at any point, a Dakar rider once said to me, at any point from minute one to the final minute, your Dakar can end. And similarly, something goes wrong with the bike, you crash, you get injured, it gets lost on the boat.
Yeah.
The story's sort of running the risk. Well, you're certainly not going to be able to tell the full story. When you were riding the bike, did you have to bear all that in mind, you know, or did you just get on with
it? Once I got the bike, and there was a kerfuffle with it, because, again, it was the fact that I turned up with no luggage, it looked dodgy.
Oh, no,
I could see why, you know,
that,
you think, who's this bloke who's just turned up from England carrying a crash helmet?
Yeah. Think, well, that's what he's telling us, isn't
it? Yeah. And then there was a thing Jamie had said. He said two things. He said, I've taken the sat-nav and the panniers are empty. Those are the two bits of information. One of them was correct because he had taken the sat-nav.
Why had he taken that?
I don't know. I think it was actually his, but I'd say, can you leave it on? Because that will be really useful to whiz around Japan. But anyway, you're gone. So, and so when I saw it in the compound, there were three customs blokes, Japanese, and their English wasn't great, and obviously I spoke, you know, two or three words, you know, hello, thanks, and so they were clearly saying, what's in the panniers? And I was going, nothing, they're empty, nothing in there, and was sort of going, you know, doing my best mime for absolutely nothing. And then so he said, open them. So I opened the first one on the sort of the side stand side, and I was not, you know, au fait with the V-Strom pannier operation. So I just opened it and it just basically fell open and loads of just came out. Tools, underpants, T-shirts, cooking stoves. It all just clanged onto the floor. And so there was this silence of the bloke. He sort of, you know, and I was saying, so nothing apart from that. Yeah. And then the other side, exactly the same. More of Jamie's basically stuff he didn't want to take home. So it was just,
had your believability suddenly altered then in their eyes?
Well, I think it helped because they'd sort of, I think they were forming the idea that maybe I was just a sort of hapless incompetent, and this confirmed. You know, I didn't even know what was in my bike's panniers, you know.
I mean, inside, are you having a good old giggle at this Monty Python sketch?
Yeah, by this stage. But by this stage, I was totally relaxed because I could see the bike. The bike was there. It was all in one piece. You know, it had been jamified, so it was dented and, you know, looked as though it had been across Mongolia.
Yep.
But it was clearly, and it worked. You know, I'd started it up. But the key was in it. You know, there were so many good things.
Yep.
So I was just kind of just excited and thinking, I can talk with these guys for 3 hours. Don't care.
They will come around to my way of thinking.
Exactly. Well, you know, they're, and also that I knew, because Titania, the gorgeous lady, had said that they want it cleared out, so they wanted to get rid of that out of their compound along with the speedboat, you know. So I was kind of thinking, eventually they'll just kick me out, and which is what happened, you know. They just said go, and so I just got on, you know, in the t-shirt that I've been wearing for, you know.
So you've still got 800 miles to go, haven't you?
Yeah.
What are you going to do for clothing then?
Well, I, at that point, I didn't even think about that. I just thought, I'm just going to... No, it was boiling, you know. It was August or when? Was it August then? It was maybe later. But anyway, it was...
Skin doesn't get torn off in a crash when it's hot, does it?
No, exactly. And so I just thought, just get out of here, get on the road, and then you can sort that problem out later on. And I kind of thought, you know, it's Japan. There's going to be a RS Taiichi shop somewhere. I can stop and buy a leather jacket, you know. That was my plan. And so, yeah, I just set off. And then about 5 miles down the road, I kind of, once the giddiness had subsided, I stopped. And because the bike was making loads of quite bad noises. And I just thought I wanted to check the oil and just do the things I should have done straight away. And it was basically all that Jamie, I don't think he'd adjusted the chain at all in true Jamie fashion. The fluids were all correct.
By luck, rather. Than
well, no, I think he's quite good at doing that. Okay. I think he's so he'd obviously topped up the oil and the, you know, the coolant was there and the, you know, everything that was, it was sort of fundamentally safe apart from, any, you know, sort of things, bolts from the crash bars were loose. So I sort of went around and just sort of, but you know, the caliper bolts were fine, you know, so the safety stuff was okay. It was just the chain was literally, I've never seen it, you know, the chain would literally, you know, a washing line kind of thing. And once that was done, the V-Stream felt, and the tyres were knackered, but it felt amazingly tight considering what I'd been through.
Had he put the off-road boots on by then?
Yeah, so it had these very worn, I can't remember what they were, but they were full-on off-road.
So not cornering at its finest then?
No, no, and when it got wet. And also the rear was really flattened off. Yeah, it was kind of, so it was, it could almost, you know, you could balance at traffic lights quite easily because it was just flat. But again, I was going to think, well, it's not a race. I'll just, you know, I'm just here to get there and I'll just pootle along.
So happiness factor in.
Oh, off the charts. Off the charts. And also I was kind of getting the idea of, you know, the whole circus thing and the cycling around a port. It was just, and then you go out and I had no idea where I was. And I suddenly, I was riding along thinking, I don't know where I am because I, you can't read any of the road signs. Because in Tokyo, they started putting, you know, the English words on. So you were, and the rest of the country, you know, you're just at a loss. And the sat-nav, obviously didn't have a sat-nav, but I downloaded an app in Korea and it just didn't really work very well. So I spent the whole time kind of lost.
Bit frustrating, surely.
No, I tell
or
you what.
Still in that good mood.
I tell you what, because the weather was good, the bike was working, I was kind of on a high and I just thought, well, I've got to go north because I know Hamamatsu's north. And so I just sort of almost, you know, I just kind of, well, I'll go up that way and just went off that way.
Okay, John, from your written piece, you definitely found Japan to be a very interesting and fascinating place. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, it's by far and away the most alien place I've ever been to, just because almost everything you know about life is different. So, you know, for a start, you don't know where you are because none of the signs you can read. So, and then just eating is because you go in, you can't read what anything is, obviously. But a lot of the restaurants, even quite the kind of expensive ones, have plastic menus with pictures on. But even with the pictures, you look at them, you think, nope, I still don't know what that is. So you end up, almost every aspect of your life is sort of an experiment.
Is it a land of total mystery?
Yeah,
almost?
It is. Yeah. And you just think, right, okay, great. And once you get into it, you just think, well, I'll have some of that. And you turns up. And even after eating it, you think, no, I'm still not really sure what that was. You know, and you think, could be chicken, could be pork. I'm not, you know, and delicious, but no idea.
I mean, was it frustrating, though? Did it become frustrating at any point? Just getting through life seems like a massive challenge.
Being lost, when I started to get closer to Hamamatsu and I was meeting some of the guys from Suzuki, so I had deadlines, you know. Because being lost is fine if you've got no deadline. You just think, oh, whatever, I'll just mosey along here and, you know, find somewhere to sleep. And it wasn't like what Jamie was doing because, you know, he was hardcore. There were it's civilised. It's a civilised, so you can always find somewhere to sleep. And, you know, it's kind of all the traffic's easy and it's just, so it's not a difficult place. It's just.
But what about the volume of traffic? Because it's a massively densely populated nation, isn't it? I mean, is it just wall-to-wall traffic?
That's probably actually the one area of frustration was that I'd look at a map and I'd see a wiggly road by a river, you know, one where if you saw it in Europe, you'd think, oh, but that's a bit tasty. And you'd go there and it would be a 40-mile-hour limit all the way and there'd be people driving it and they obey all the rules. You know, the Japanese drivers, if it says 40, they'll be doing 40 on the nose, you know. And most of it's built up and they haven't invented roundabouts. So it's just traffic light tastic, the whole thing. So you see this gorgeous, which would be gorgeous, and it's just stop, start, stop, start, stop. And it was only, you know, I only probably had 1 or 2 days good riding because I just couldn't tell from the map what would be good and what would be bad, you know.
So, I mean, the GSXR 1000 in Japan, waste of time?
Well, I mean, I think if you know where to go,
right?
Because I met up with a Japanese photographer and we were going to do some shots for the magazine around Mount Fuji. And there's a road, for instance, going up Mount Fuji where all the, I think it's called the Skyline Avenue or something. And so it's, you know, where the car was named after, you know. So, and there's this beautiful kind of, you know, fantastic Alpine style road. And that was, you know, that was by far and away the best road. And the photographer saying you just have to know where to go because it's a mountainous country. You know, the spine of the country is hardly anyone lives there because it's just mountains, you know. So, and there are some fantastic passes. But I didn't know about them because I didn't have the sat nav.
How much pressure were you under in terms of time then? Were you having to do, you know, 12-hour days or not?
No, I did one long day. Nothing like Hugo did or Jamie did because I didn't have that far to go. And I only did 800 miles because I kind of got lost a lot. I probably, as a crow flies, it's probably only 500 miles. So, you know, it was only the final day where I had to meet Haruki from Suzuki, who was going to guide me to the factory, that I had a deadline. And so then I think, you know, when I was riding through Tokyo and then a typhoon hit, which obviously I didn't know about because I couldn't listen to the news. So I was riding along thinking, oh, it seems a bit rainy. And, you know, there were apparently loads of warnings saying, don't go out. And I was thinking,
seems a bit rainy.
Exactly. Quite breezy, you know, and it was a proper typhoon in it.
So a massive wind as well.
Yeah. It was quite dicey.
V-Strom all right?
The V-Strom was rock solid. I think, you know.
It had square tyres.
It had square tyres, you know, no big fairing. And actually, you know, and no, you know, just panniers. It wasn't massive luggage. Oh, obviously, I didn't have anything.
Still having fun, though.
Oh, yeah. And again, it was just an adventure. I just
What about the clothing that you'd obviously sorted by then?
Yeah, I'd stopped. Eventually found. Because it's not like nothing's like over here, you know, to find a motorcycle stop, you have to find the motorcycle area, you know, which is never on a big road. So eventually it was the Japanese photographer who said, you need to go to a certain place. And we went down this kind of back streets and suddenly there's just, you know, loads of accessory shops.
Yeah.
And then I bought a leather jacket and some waterproofs because he said it's going to be rainy.
Sure.
He didn't mention the typhoon, but anyway. But so I did as I was told. So yeah, so I was sort of fairly kitted up and it was warm. The thing is, you know, typhoon.
Yeah, warm rain.
So exactly, it was sort of tropical storm kind of thing. Yeah. So it wasn't, you know, it was sort of.
Tell me about the Japanese. I mean, you've hinted that they were very helpful. Couldn't do enough for you on occasion.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost everyone I met took instant pity on me because I was clearly floundering in such a massive way and I was lost the whole time. I was lost.
Yeah.
So I was forever stopping and sort of, you know, turning the map. I had a map, you know, but it only showed the major roads and I wasn't on them, you know, and the sat nav was useless. You know, my downloaded thing was just rubbish. So I was continually by the side of the road, just sort of doing this, looking like a Berk. And people would come up and say, you know, what I guessed was, where are you trying to go? And so I'd point on the map and they'd say, well, go down, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's, I think I put it in the story. I'd stop once and it was dark and I couldn't find this little traditional place I'd found in one of the books I had that I wanted to stay at. I just couldn't find it. And I was just sort of riding around. And this fella came up dressed in his, you know, sort of suit and carrying his briefcase, obviously walking back from work. And it was about 7:30. And we sort of had this mime conversation of me being lost. And I showed him the name of this place in the book, saying, I was trying to get here. I think it's somewhere here, you know. And he just ran off. And I was thinking, slightly odd. I wonder why is he running off? But I sort of, he had positive vibes. So I thought, well, I'll wait, just see. And he came back and he'd been home to his flat and he printed out a Google Maps map. And then he got a highlighter pen. And come back and give me, you know, and that happened, that sort of thing happened all the time, you know, and I think it's just kind of most people are really decent, you know, and if they see someone who needs some help, give them some help.
Now, one point where I started chuckling, you were saying things were not as they might seem over here or anywhere else in the sort of Western world by the sound of it. You wanted a hotel and you found one, but it turned out to be a slightly different place than you wanted.
Yeah, well, this was the sat nav's fault. So my downloaded app, when I was going towards Tokyo, and it was getting very, very, obviously Tokyo's huge, sprawling, you know, kind of like the middle of the M25, just everything is just urban. And so I my little rough guidebook had no recommended places. So I tried my sat-nav app. I said, you know, find me nearest hotel, because it was kind of late and the typhoon had hit. So I was soaked, not cold, but just soaked, you know. And I thought, I've had enough of this. I'm just going to pay for a hotel. I don't care what it costs. I'm done. And so I pressed go to find nearest hotel.
What had you previously done for payment? Sold your body or something? I don't understand.
What do you mean?
You just said, sorry, I'm going to pay for a hotel.
Well, I've been trying to stay in like a traditional B&Bs.
With you.
So you turn up and there'll be a kind of...
So you got to the anywhere will do. Just get
me... Yeah, I just thought I'll get the Best Western or whatever. I don't care about traditional Japanese. With I just want somewhere that's dry, you know. So I pressed this button and the sat-nav took me and it was taking me out of, in the middle of nowhere, or just this sprawl of warehouses. And then I saw this neon sign, which I'm guessing said hotel. So, and it sort of went up there and I went in there and I was drenched and carrying a crash helmet. And I sort of trudged in and asked, so, you know, one room, kind of, you know, I thought they'd get the gist. They're a hotel, they maybe speak a bit of English. And there was some confusion, which I didn't understand what she was on about. And then there was a list of prices up on the board. And I said, that's very reasonable for, you know, because it seemed like quite a nice place. And I was looking down, and I was saying, could I have one of those? And she sort of made some face. And so I sort of got wind that all was not as it seemed, but I was dozy and I just kind of didn't cotton on. And eventually, anyway, obviously it was a knocking shop. And, it was, and so it was just, which they have, they call them love hotels in Japan, which I hadn't known about.
And what were the rates again?
They were very reasonable, Chris. You would have loved it. Yeah, and obviously the bemusement was I turned up on my own. Yep. So, and then she was... And
for a bit of self-love.
And I presume the conversation, which, because she was talking at me, which I didn't understand, but I'm presuming she was trying to sort out someone to, you know, make my stay more pleasurable. but I didn't know that. I thought she was explaining something about the room rates. But anyway, so in the end...
You've got no idea how many people you amused in Japan throughout this trip. Man.
Well, it was a sort of pinballing around being an idiot.
Right, let's come to the massive bit now. Your arrival at the Suzuki factory.
Yeah. Well, what...
You were hailed as an absolute hero, weren't you?
Well, yeah, because... None of this we'd planned. So Hugo and I and Jamie, we said to the guys at Suzuki, we're going to turn up at the factory, and I'd wanted to have a tour of a production line and actually see the bikes being made, you know, and just do a bit of a feature for the magazine there. So that's what I had in mind. And I kind of thought it would be like when you turn up at Triumph or whatever, you go to reception, they go, yeah, find your way up. And someone comes and picks you up and takes you off. That's what I thought would happen. And then Haruki, who works in Suzuki's, I think he's boss of their marketing department in Japan, he wanted to meet me to go for a ride to show me where the test riders ride.
Yep.
Which was great. I thought, yeah, fine. You know, so we went for a little ride. And then he started getting all funny about the time we go to the factory. But by then I was just ignoring it.
Had you any inkling?
Absolutely none. I had no inkling of what was going to happen. But he was just sort of saying, we must arrive there at 9 o'clock. And I was saying, well, we'll get there easily. He said, no, but not before. But by then I was kind of thinking, well, Japan's mad. And this is some sort of other Japan thing where you can't arrive early as well as not arriving late. You have to arrive on the dot. And so anyway, we rolled around the corner at 9 o'clock in the morning, exactly. And the entire factory, the whole motorcycle manufacturing factory, all the R&D, all the sales, all the market, they'd all come out.
How many? Hundreds?
Hundreds. I think there was nearly 300, Haruki said. So all the staff from the Hamamatsu factory had come out and they had banners saying, hooray for bike, and, you know, and they obviously thought I'd ridden all the way.
Mm. Now, did you feel a bit fraudulent?
Totally.
Did you try to explain?
Yeah, I was saying, because Haruki knew that I hadn't, because his English was very good, but he just kept saying, it's okay, just
milk it.
Yeah, exactly. So I did try, and so there were very senior engineers who designed the V-Strom coming up, and they were really excited because their new bike had made it all the way across, halfway around the world, and done all the, you know, managed to survive all this stuff. So they were genuinely excited, and they were genuinely excited to meet me, you know. So I was sort of saying, yeah, but I didn't actually do the difficult bit. I've just come from up the road. But they, because of the language problem, it just, and in the end I sort of gave up and went, yeah, it was tough, you know. because I thought, well, you know, it made
Finn
them
fatigue.
Exactly, it just made them happier. That's, and Haruki was just saying, just take, you know, just say I'm saying you've done it all, but you've got, so which was fine. But then, I can't remember if I put this in the piece actually, but they took me in and they got all the senior engineers, and there was also one of them was Sahara Sam, who went on to run their MotoGP campaign. So real high level.
Absolutely,
and there was, they sat down and it was a proper meeting, and with about 10 of them, and they said, Westlake San, tell us how the V-Strom coped with Mongolia. And so I'd only had emails with Jamie. So all I knew, so I didn't even know the shock had broken,
yeah,
you know, and he'd replaced it because yeah. I was traveling and yeah. doing things when...
Did the guy asking you the question know that?
No, right, okay. Because they thought I'd ridden across. And so I sort of winged it and just kind of said, yeah, it was really good. And they obviously thought, God, this is amazing. Our bike's come all the way across, and the bloke hasn't got anything to say about it.
I just wondered if he'd known a shock and
no.
a fuel pump had been...
No.
No,
because Jamie hadn't written his story yet.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but somebody in Japan has sent some bits to Mongolia for this.
Well,
bike,
no, because
they
came via Hugo in the UK.
I beg your pardon, right?
So the factory knew nothing of, right. So hence their interest. Right. So, yeah, it was all, as you say, there was a bit of shame thinking, you know, I hadn't done the difficult bit, but, you know.
Now, I presume that was pretty much the end of it and you were just going to fly home. Was there any sort of... Though there must have been a fantastic sense of achievement having, you know, reached the target and getting just treated like an absolute god, did you start to deflate a bit after that? Because let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I was really sad to leave the V-Strom because apart from anything else, it looked just fantastic because it just looked battle worn. You know, it had done something no other V-Strom at that point had ever done.
Yep.
And I'd enjoyed riding it. You know, it was okay on the chonky tyres, but it was fine. It was lovely, you know, and it had sort of looked after me. And so, yeah, and also I wanted to go and explore Japan. It was one of those ones where, so it was a real, yeah, I was gutted. I really love to stay here, you know. But they wanted to take the bike away and all the engineers, you know, they wanted to basically strip it and look at it and, you know, measure it or whatever they're going to do to it. So, yeah, and then they just put me on a bullet train and sent me off to the airport.
How did you feel at the end of your stint in Istanbul, Hugo?
Well,
were you a bit deflated?
Yeah, I would have liked to have carried on, you know. Yep, I mean, that thing of looking across the Bosphorus and thinking, there's a whole load more miles to do and it'd be great to keep going.
Yeah, Jamie said in his piece, actually, you could tell that he was starting to feel down as his journey came to a close and he started considering what he was about to go back to and all the sort of routine and normality. He started to feel a bit cheesed off. And
well, it wasn't long before he started thinking about doing another trip, I know that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds as though he's addicted to travelling, bike travelling. What about the sort of highs and lows of your stint that you can recall?
Oh, well, the whole of my... I mean, the low point, I suppose, or the most... There was a bit... Because I'd got time to kill in Greece and the roads were fantastic and I was having a great time. There was a bit where I suddenly realised that I was in the middle of nowhere and the sat-nav was telling me to go up what was basically a dirt track. And the fuel gauge was empty. You know, it's that one. And then, so you're riding along trying to keep this, you know, trying to ride for economy and get, and that's right. I got finally, after, you know, fuel gauge empty for like 40 miles, really twisty track, came down into a village and arrived at a petrol station just as the bloke's locking the door to his little cabin. And you know, and just sort of smiled at me and waved and walked off. And I'm like,
why do you think I've pulled up here, this?
Yeah, exactly. And I can't remember what I did then. I think I went for lunch, actually.
You adopted the Greek custom
exactly.
of not giving a damn and starting to eat.
Yeah, I thought at least there's a petrol station. It'll open sometime.
Yeah. If you didn't have the laws, though, if it wasn't tough, and you didn't have difficulty and you weren't down from time to time, There would be no story, would there? It would be just dull. That's the whole point, as you've said about these stories, to challenge yourself, to get over these little mountains that seem to get plonked before you at no notice.
I think in my bit, there weren't, I mean, I'm trying to remember if whether I actually, because it was all so exciting. And I, you know, and it was only, you know, 10 days, of, you know, of it wasn't that long. Like, there weren't any times where, I mean, there were times I was slightly hacked off with a sat-nav because it just, you know, kept being a pain. But for the most part, it was loads of challenges, but they were just, you just think, right, okay, fine. Here we go. It's quite windy. And then you find out later that it's a, basically a hurricane, you know. And
do you think you could have gone for at least another 10, 20, 30 days without the novelty wearing off?
I mean, if anyone, you know, watching this has got the opportunity to go and ride in Japan, because one of the guys I work with on the magazine, just he, based on my conversations with him, went off, one of the riding instructor blokes who used to do a column, went off to Japan and spent 3 weeks. I was so jealous, and hired a bike and rode round. Yeah, and if you go in, when's the time? I think it's spring when the blossom comes out, and it's, you get to see this, and it's just...
Is it number one on your list of places to go, though?
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. I think for me, because I'm fundamental, I'm not like Jamie. Jamie's kind of just inherently brave, you know, and so the whole Mongolia thing, it sort of appeals, but I know that if it's cold and I'm running out of fuel and I'm a bit worried about whether I'm going to get mugged and whatever, you know, I wouldn't enjoy it in the way that he just seems to just sail through it. Whereas Japan is totally civilized, you know. There are petrol stations everywhere. You know, you're not going to...
What's the driving like in Japan? Is it super courteous?
Yeah, I mean, I spent 2 days before I discovered that there are toll roads, which sounds stupid because I was kind of trying to find windy roads. And I was thinking, how does anyone get anywhere? And then they all just use toll roads. And the driving there goes, so on the little roads, they all do 40 miles an hour, you know, on roads that over here we'd be doing, you know, unlimited, you'd be whizzing along at 80 or whatever. But no one does that, absolutely no one. Whereas the toll roads, they tank down those 90, 100 mile an hour.
Sure.
Even when it was, you know, there was people aquaplaning and stuff and it was quite dodgy, they slowed down a bit.
So there is an element of craziness and risk-taking.
That was in Tokyo. I think like any big city, seems to be where, you kind of, the other rules don't apply. And so, riding through Tokyo was, I mean, it was just like riding through London or Rome or anywhere big, you know, it's just kind of, it's a bit of a maelstrom. But it was just the civil engineering, because it's all mountains, you know, so you get flyovers like you've never seen, you know, proper Blade Runner style stacked motorways. You know, I think I put it in there. There was one bit where I was riding along and the traffic was really slow because of the rain and the wind. And I looked in and I must have been looking in at apartments that were maybe 10 stories high, you know, because you're on this weird floating road. It's kind of like, you know, Spaghetti Junction, but layered on top of layers. And so there's loads of that.
So sum up your trip in just a few words then, talking about, you know, your experiences and the bike.
I think with Japan, the V-Strom was the kind of the tool, and perfect tool really, because it was kind of, it just did what it does. And so I didn't really have to think or worry about the bike at all. And if I had better tyres on, I would have enjoyed the twisty roads. As it was all a bit kind of nerve-wracking. But it's probably one of the most special experiences of my life, I guess. Yeah, and my career.
So does that fit very high up on the list of
massively high
biking sort of experiences?
Yeah, right? Because of just the alien nature of feeling, of coming back. And, you know, Hugo's saying it's a week. And I came back and it felt like a lot longer because you're being challenged the whole time of, you know, well, where am I? What do I eat? Where do I stay? Why is there no bed in my, you know, you go into somewhere to stay the night. There's just a rush mat. You sort of think, or I went out to a posh restaurant. The photographers took me to a posh restaurant, and there's no chairs. And being a sort of Westerner who hasn't stretched in doing cross country in 1804, I couldn't maintain a cross-legged seat long enough. They had to go and get cushions and stuff because otherwise I was going, oh, my legs, I can't sit here, you know. So everything.
So it was novel from absolute first minute of the day.
Every single minute, you're just going, this is bonkers, you know. Which is, you know, it's just astonishing. Yeah.
Hugo, sum yours up. Your stint to Istanbul, was it sort of much more conventional by comparison? Yeah. Still very enjoyable.
Really enjoyable. Really enjoyable. So for me, that thing of crossing the border into Turkey, because you know, I've done autobahns in Germany, I've done Alpine passes, and I've done down through Italy, and I've done Greece, but crossing the border into Turkey, where you feel like you're getting into new territory, and there are new challenges, and I guess sitting with Jamie in the mosque, in the central area in Istanbul, and smoking a hookah was pretty good. You know, I mean, that whole vibe of being somewhere different, and that's why looking across the Bosphorus and going, oh, I'd really like to be carrying on, was so significant, I think. And it's that, going back to the stuff about planning, that thing about not having too fixed a plan. I knew when I had to be at the border, and that was it. There was nothing in between. So my original plan to get, you know, when things change, you're able to go, oh, well, I'll just go down through Italy instead. That was really nice.
What was that ferry like, by the way, from Brindisi over to Greece?
Straightforward. I wish I'd paid for a cabin so I didn't have to sit with the snoring truck drivers. But it's really straightforward. There's a couple of places. There's a couple of places down the coast that you can get it from the Italy to Greece, depending on how far down the heel of Italy you want to go. But really straightforward.
So the question is, would you like to do it again? Could you do the whole thing again?
Yeah, for me, if I had, you know, 4 or 5 months, yeah, love to. And I don't know, because I'm not Jamie, you know, I don't know how I'd manage the stuff he managed, you know, so it could be that actually I regret the tough stuff because I've never done that sort of ride across Mongolia thing before. But that's part of the reason I'd like to give it a go. The bit I loved was the whole thing of just setting off and going that way. And thinking, well, I haven't got to do 200 or 400 miles today. I've just got to see where I go.
Get a bit closer.
And then I'll just pitch up somewhere and it'll all work itself out. You know, and just living your life like that. I can totally see why Jamie loves that, that way of just kind of just traveling.
New day. It's,
yeah, new day. You wake up, you think, okay, I wonder who I'm going to meet today. Yeah. I'm just going to head that way. And it'll all, and you come across things. Yeah, so, yeah, I'd love to do it. I'd definitely love to go back to Japan and kind of give it the time it deserves. You know, you spend 3 weeks or a month in Japan, and when you could travel around. I know that's only the one island. Obviously, there's other islands. And just talking about it with you is just kind of reinvigorating.
I've really enjoyed hearing you recall it. I'd like to get on a plane to Japan tomorrow. Would you like to do the whole lot, Hugo?
No, I'd love to. I'd love to. It'd be a fantastic thing to do the whole thing. But I'd love to. I mean, just talking about it, I've definitely, you know, Japan has been on my list, and I haven't been there, and I'd love to do that. But even that stretch in Europe was fantastic, you know. And traveling by motorcycle is just the best thing, isn't it? It's that sense of adventure. To me, it's one of the best feelings in motorcycling is when the ferry door starts opening. You know, you've had your night on the ferry or your ferry trip. That's why the tunnel's not as good. That you're on the car deck and there's a couple of other bikes there and you're ready to go and the door starts opening and you kind of go, here we go, you know, adventure, here we come. But certainly, you know, riding in Greece was amazing. The crossing the border into Turkey, but I wish I'd gone over the Bosphorus. I'd really like to get to the Caspian Sea, I think. You know, that's only about another 800 or 900 miles, I think, from there. So that'd be all right.
Well, I think you'll agree with me that was a brilliant story. Well done to the pair of yous. I totally enjoyed listening to that. You've made me want to do what you have just sort of summed up by saying, you know, you can't beat an adventure on a bike, can you? You can't beat travelling on a motorcycle. So, yeah, fantastic. Hold your heads up high. I really think you've done something very special there.
Can we just say, if Jamie's watching this, can you get in touch?
Because we should probably re-emphasise, it was Jamie's adventure. Yeah, yeah. And we just did the bits at the beginning and the end, you know. And, yeah. So, yeah, Jamie, give us a call.